Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of Inside Personal Growth, and I want to thank all of our listeners who join us from around the world to listen to the words of wisdom from our authors. And today joining me on the line is Rameshwar Das. He is the co-author with Ram Das of a book, The Path of the Heart, Be Loved Now. Good day to you, Rameshwar. How are you doing?
Hi, Greg. It's nice to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure having you on, and I know that this book is doing very well, and it's a pleasure to have you on to be able to have you talk to our listeners about the book. And I want to let our listeners know just a little bit about you. Rameshwar Das was born James Litton. He's worked as a photographer and writer. First met Ram Das while a college student in 1967, studying yoga and meditation with him, and traveled to India in 70 to see Ram Das and Guru Kim Karoli Baba.
Neem Karoli Baba.
Yeah. He lived there from 1970 to 72, receiving his name that he has now, Rameshwar Das at the time. He's returned to India every few years over the interval, and has collaborated with Ram Das on a number of projects, including the original box that became Be Here Now and the Love, Serve, Remember set of recordings. Currently, they serve together on the board of the, is it Neem Karoli
yeah.
Baba Ashram?
Got it.
A humanitarian temple in Taos, New Mexico. Well, it's a pleasure having you on with us indeed. And, you know, you first met Ram Das at a talk that he was giving at the university. And I'd really like to know from your perspective, just meeting Ram Das, and what has happened with you, Rameshwar, since your encounter with him way back in 1967? I think our listeners would really, you know, be interested in hearing a little bit about that story.
Well, I was fairly typical you know, going through a lot of upheaval. It was a time when the Vietnam War was raging. There was a huge amount of upheaval on campuses, as you probably know. And Ram Das and Timothy Leary were kind of infamous at the time for the tune in, turn on, drop out message going out into the world from the what was still kind of the incipient psychedelic wave of in the culture at that point. So, you know, I was really searching on a personal level also, and I had started studying Buddhism and a little bit of Hinduism, and looking for meaning in my personal life. And I went to this talk that was advertised on campus thinking I was going to get the Better Living Through Modern Chemistry talk. And instead, I got the guru from India.
Yeah, what a pleasant surprise that was, huh?
Well, it was a surprise. It was
yeah.
good. And Ram Das had just come back from 6 months in an ashram, mostly staying on silence and learning a lot of yoga and meditation. He was really juiced at that point. I mean, he had a lot of whatever you want to call it, psychic energy, I guess, Shakti. And that talk started at 7:30 in the evening in a student lounge. And after a while, somebody turned out the lights and there was just this voice coming through the darkness, and people were kind of sprawled around, and it went on until 3 a.m.
Wow. And you kind of, you mention it really right in the first introduction of the book, and it is a great way to start this book out, and it really sets the tone for the rest of the book. And I just want to acknowledge you for that, because you kind of tell the story about going into this lecture and then, as you said, listening to somebody that's extremely aware and juiced and had lots of energy, and a talk that went on, and you talk about that. Now, you mentioned that the experiencing a deep unconditional love for yourself is part of our deep inner being. Can you explain to the listeners what it really kind of feels like to have this true unconditional love and what you and Ram Dass are attempting to articulate to people through this book. And this is one in a trilogy, I might add, for our listeners who don't know the other two books.
Well, I think the experience of unconditional love came from meeting my guru in India. And it really started with that first evening with Ram Dass. And when I got to India, it was that same feeling, which made me realize that this old man in a blanket, who we came to call Maharaji, which just means it's kind of an honorific in India, which means great king, that it was coming from him. And he was just, you would sit with him and there was nothing particularly going on. He would just be talking with people. A lot of the conversations were about the ordinary things in life. People, you know, with their health problems, needing to get their daughter married, and all of the stuff that people go through. And but he was just like sunshine. There was this feeling of deep love that one, I think we all felt in his presence. And as one friend said, you know, the amazing thing was not that you experienced this love from him, but that you started to feel that love for other people too.
Yeah, and Ram Dass mentions in the book that the first time that he returned from India, he felt as though he was carrying this jewel in his heart. And he wanted to share it. It's kind of like this amazing energy, isn't it? I mean, if somebody's a devotee of a master, and you refer to it in the book, in the West, that isn't so much a common practice, but in the East it is. So can you explain this, you know, kind of carrying this amazing jewel in your heart and the surrender? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, I guess this has to do with the how you would think about this idea of guru, which is, you know, in the West we think of gurus as teachers, really, and in the East I think the more direct interpretation of it is somebody who really can take you through to your own liberation. And in that sense, it's someone who reflects your own deepest inner place. And that's what, I say what, is because it's more of a what than a who Maharaji is. And one of the great Indian saints that we talk about in the book, who was called Ramana Maharshi, got enlightened when he was about 16 or 17, but he said in his later life, after he had really kind of stabilized in who he was, that the God and the guru and one's inmost self are the same place. And I think that was a very significant realization that Ram Dass was able to communicate to people, that this idea of an inner being,
yeah, it's not something
could be reflected from outside, but it's really the same thing.
Yeah, not something separate. I think in the West frequently, and with, I'm not going to pick on any religion, they have a tendency to separate the two. And I think in Buddhism and various practices, it's from this one within. Now, these saints, as you talk about in the book, they've achieved this state not known in the West. And it's really, this is kind of the journey of Ram Dass's experience with the saints, correct?
Yes, it is. And I think Ram Dass was able to translate from his experiences and his knowledge of Western psychology to make those states a little more comprehensible for us in the West.
most definitely. And one of the areas that I want to speak about is that he says there's a reference to this confusion between an emotional heart and the spiritual heart. And he devotes a section to the book, or the two of you do. Can you explain to our listeners kind of the difference between this emotional heart and the spiritual heart?
Well, I can only give you my own experience. Ram Dass is better at expressing this, and his wisdom is deeper than mine. But
well, there's a Sanskrit word that you guys reference in the book. Mm-hmm. And can you pronounce it for me? Because I don't want to mispronounce it. Is it Haridayam? Haridasam?
Haridayam.
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 And they say it's the seat of the consciousness, and what the Quakers called the still small house of God.
So, voice.
Voice of God. I'm sorry. Yeah. Voice of God. So can you explain your experience of that? The differencing, this confusion between the two?
Well, I think that the difference is that one is kind of part of the personality mind, we could call, or the thinking mind, and that we interpret those emotions through our thoughts, whereas that deeper place really comes from beyond the what you can call ego or personality. And it's more like it emanates from the shared awareness that we're all part of. I mean, awareness is like without all of the thoughts and qualities, just simple awareness of breathing or feeling is something that we all experience pretty much the same way. Mm-hmm. And if you go into that awareness, that quality of awareness, it becomes perhaps more of an all-pervading consciousness. And I think that's the place that these saints come from and where Maharaji lived.
So you mention in the book, it's moving from the identity in the head to the mind-heart. What's it like? I mean, it's some of this. These concepts are tough to explain in words because it's a feeling. It's a kind of like this whole shift or transformation that one makes. But Ram Dass mentions, he said that he witnessed his own mind from inside. What was he trying to explain there?
Well, I think to the extent that you can calm your mind so that you can come into that heart place, then you begin to separate out what we might call the soul from the thinking mind. And the thoughts and feelings and emotions become kind of like scenes on a movie that you're watching, and you become more of a neutral observer in your own life, and there begins to be a feeling of observing or watching as you go through things. Of course, we all get caught up in anything that happens to grab our consciousness at any given moment, but then maybe you surface occasionally into that witness place. And as that becomes more of an inward pull, I think you begin to associate more with that soul part of your consciousness.
So the kind of the calling of the soul too. And Ram Dass said that he was loving awareness. So wherever he looked, anything that he touched, it was this awareness, and he was and it was kind of this envelopment and love, but really away from the ego. So one of the things I want you to speak about is how would people who are listening today move from that ego, first identifying the awareness of the ego, and then secondly, some ways that people might move from that to this loving awareness that he was talking about.
Well, I think you're talking about practice at this point. And
I am, and I think it's important, especially that people understand the practices that maybe some of the things that you did at that level. I'm sure meditation one. I have another question coming up for you about chanting and the vibration that that brings and the shift in consciousness. But maybe talk just a little bit around that so that they can understand some of the things on a spiritual path you're going to create this loving awareness.
Well, anything that you can do that gets you some leverage on your own passing show, if you want to call it that, of what's going on in your life at any given moment, whether it's watching your breath or doing a mantra or a prayer. I remember Ram Dass teaching me this prayer from the Greek Orthodox Church at one point that he used for quite a while. And chanting certainly can take you into that space. And the one that he's been working with lately is what you referred to. It's kind of an English mantra of I am loving awareness. And it's simply a way of bringing yourself into that heart space so that you can begin to watch what's going on in your life from that place. And again, it's that witness function in the mind.
Right.
So that's it's and it is just practice. I mean, you just got to do it for a while.
Yeah. Well, all of this is practice. I mean, look at the number of years that you've committed your life to this whole journey. And it's your spiritual journey. It's Ram Dass's spiritual journey. But I think for others, the whole idea of the book is to learn and pull out what they would like to understand and practice as a spiritual journey. And he mentions that when we shift our awareness and understand the unity of all things, we awaken. Can you comment on, because that would be the next step, kind of the progressive step in this, wouldn't it?
Well, you could call it awakening, and certainly some of the saints that we described, I think of as fully awakened or realized beings who weren't caught up in the the daily stuff of their lives. They led, certainly led physical lives, but I don't think they identified so much with all of the phenomenal existences they did with their inner being. And it's that shift of identity that happens, and it happens very gradually. I mean, I would say, 99.9% of the time, I'm still caught up in my thoughts and feelings and the stuff of like, okay, I got to go see the accountant today and, this and that. But there are those moments when it opens. And I think those moments when you get pulled in and you start to feel that love and you become that feeling of expansive love, that's so seductive. And it lightens everything else. You know, all of the loads that we carry of stuff that we're doing and relationships and, our concerns about the environment and everything else that's all around us. From that perspective of witnessing from that heart space, all of that stuff is much lighter. It's not really up to us quite so much.
Right. It's definitely a huge shift in consciousness. Now, in the book, you talk about the importance of darshan, and I'd like for you to let our listeners know what it is. It's like this being in the presence of this holy being, but can you explain a little bit further? Because when you had this experience with Maharishi, you basically kind of, you guys moved into this space. And I don't actually, I'll be honest with you, it's the first time I'd actually heard the term.
Well, in, it's a Hindu term, and it literally means view. But I think it is more to do with like point of view. So it's that shift in point of view to seeing existence from the same place that one of these beings sees it, who sees it all as one. So it's a brief view of oneness, and maybe not so brief. I mean, and those beings just carry it around with them. That's who they are. So when you're in the presence of a being who sees you and the rest of the world as a unified field, you begin to feel that too.
So if for our people that are on this kind of path and practice, explain this vibrational mantras and chantings and the shift that actually that assists one in getting into almost like, I hate to refer to it, but I'm going to say the zone. You call it the field of the divine. So this chanting and these mantras are very important part of one making the shift to get into this space, right?
Well, it's one way to practice. And there's certainly, you know, in Hinduism's kind of fun because there is many different kinds of Hinduism as there are Hindus in many respects. And I've found that that's very true of, you know, anybody who takes on some sort of spiritual path or whatever you want to call it. It's very individual, and you need to feel out what feels right for you as a practice. But these chants and mantras, which have been used for thousands of years in India, do carry this kind of vibrational quality with them. So they got it from somewhere, and it takes you somewhere. So using Ram or Hare Krishna or Om, those syllables do carry vibrational qualities that can take you out of your mind and into your heart. I think that's how we described it in the book. And I think that's actually a pretty apt way of thinking about it. It's like you tune into that vibration and it takes you out of all of the thought processes and distracting sensations for a little while so that you can tune into the deeper vibration of that shared consciousness that we're talking about.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, I think that, you know, when people get to that state, it's kind of this state of surrender. So I want to talk about this concept of surrender, because even when it references love, you know, when we think about it in the West, it implies kind of giving up, as you discuss in the book. But giving up to the beloved doesn't mean giving up powers to another being. And as you state, it's letting go of the stuff that keeps you separate. I think this is a really important comment that's made in the book, because I think it's a shift that people have to make in their definition of what surrender is. Can you comment on this for a minute for our listeners?
Well, Ram Dass and I talked about this a lot, and he has I think when he first started speaking in the West, he discovered that this idea of surrender really was a hot button topic, because it has so many connotations of power and, you know, sexual dominance and all this stuff that is in our culture. But in this case, surrender is giving up to your inner being. It's allowing the attachments that you have to your life and to your thoughts and to your feelings to fall away so that you can enter into that deeper state. To the extent that it feels like there's some personal transaction going on, it's probably not the right thing. And it's certainly, you know, with the way our culture works and all of the different kinds of teachers that we run into in the West, it can feel like a transaction, and you want to be wary of that. But real surrender to that, you know, when you say it's to a guru, it's really to that inner place.
So for our listeners out there that might be thinking, Rameshwar, that's challenging for me. You know, I got bills to pay. I got kids. I got the daily challenges of life. I have to live my life, and I'm in this, and I'm not much of an observer of self. What's one step somebody like that who might be listening to this interview going, man, I don't get this at all, but what would be the first thing that you might gift to this person in your wisdom of having gone through this deep spiritual journey?
Well, you know, when we're caught up in all of the stuff of our daily lives, we feel like, you know, first of all, we're totally responsible for it all. We're supposed to be responsible adults, right? And it's all about us. And, you know, one of the really, I guess, kind of revolutionary messages that comes through the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about karma yoga, and which is the yoga of action, is this idea of giving up the fruits of your actions. In other words, it's not up to you. I mean, a lot of it is, yet from the place where you're feeling identified with who's in this body and paying your bills and doing your work, you got to do it. But it's also, there is that deeper place where you can surrender how it's all going to come out, because it's not always all up to us. And that place of just lightening it a little bit by giving up to that deeper place, to that heart space, you can call it God, you can call it the spirit, you can call it your soul. But that really, you know, lightens things up quite a lot.
So you're really talking about faith in something greater than yourself. Is that what you'd be referencing? I mean, if somebody was looking at it from a Christian perspective, who might be listening, you know, he's really talking about having a deep faith. Now, we're not talking about belief. We're talking about a faith, right?
Yeah. And as you, you know, are pointing out, they're different.
They're hugely different. This is actually going beyond your belief.
Yeah.
You know, because those are the things that get us hung up, are those beliefs. We make them up, then we believe them, and then we make up ones after we make up the ones that we decided to discard. Kind of a broken record, isn't it?
Yeah, it gets a little circular.
So Ram Dass says, one way to stay in the heart is to hang out with others who are on this same journey. And I think this is really important. And these satsangs, which, you know, some listeners are going to know. I definitely know about satsangs. And these are communities that form to assist one. Can you explain the importance of people staying kind of in this loving essence and supporting one another along these deep spiritual journeys, just how important these satsangs are?
Well, you know, it's friends and family along the way who will keep you straight. It's not like you're going to join a club and pay dues. It's more like finding people of like inclination who share this understanding that there is a deeper level of consciousness in their life that they are wanting to stay in or move towards. And together we can kind of remind each other of that heart space now and then when we get stuck or lost or submerged, which happens all the time for everybody. And that's a great gift. And it's also a very sweet place to hang out with other beings in.
And I couldn't agree more, because it's that community, it's that bonding, it's that opportunity to share your feelings and emotions and your true heart self with others that really deeply assists you in making transformation in your life, because you have a place to go to to share, and that other people are on the same path and feeling the same thing and going through similar experiences. So it's just so important. One of the things that you and Ram Dass talk about in the book is this, you talk about pleasure, happiness, and joy. What are the differences between the three? You make a distinct kind of difference.
Wow. Well, pleasure, I think, you know, has to do with sensations and what you experience from, you know, direct kind of ego satisfaction. And that also runs into the emotion of happiness. Joy, I think of as more that feeling of just deep happiness that comes from touching that place of unconditional love, where it's coming from your soul. It's coming from that place of shared consciousness or shared awareness that allows you to merge into that happiness, to become absorbed in it, and not just to have a momentary feeling.
So you're saying that's more sustainable. Joy is the one that we want to sustain. It's the spiritual one.
Yeah, you know, the Indian way of expressing it is they call it Sat Chit Ananda, which is the truth. Sat means truth, and Chit is consciousness, and Ananda is bliss. So it's the bliss of that consciousness of really having a true understanding of what's going on.
Wow. And that's so important, because the pleasure is just the senses. It's the one that's, you know, it's temporary. This is one that's sustainable. So for our listeners, you know, they've been listening in now, and they, what's the true takeaway from Be Love Now? What are you and Ram trying to bring to the world today? And what message are you attempting to have people walk away from after they've read this book, pulled out what they want, and practice this to make this world a better place? What do you guys would like for them to take away?
Well, Maharaji used to, kind of shake his finger at us, and he said in Hindi, "Sub ek," which means it's all one. Don't you get it? It's all one, and you're a part of that too. And that place of oneness where that unconditional love emanates from is here. And, you know, we can experience it. It takes practice, and it's a path to enter into it, but it is also always here. And I think that reassurance that we can all touch that place and be in it together, for that matter, is, that happens, the world will be a little different, huh?
It would be hugely different. And it, like you guys say, it's really about surrendering. And you know, when you talk about the ego, which you did a little bit here today, it's about letting go of that. And it's about letting go of you being right. And it's about you showing up with this transformational essence and this love energy to help your fellow man and not to separate yourself. And so I think in the book, both of you have done a miraculous job at articulating that. Where would our listeners go to learn more about the foundation, about Ram Dass, about getting the book, about any upcoming webinars you might be having or appearances that might be going on? Where would they go for that?
Well, the simplest is you can access a lot of Ram Dass talks, and he does monthly webcasts, and the place to go for that is ramdass.org.
Okay.
There's also a fun a blog that's been running of people's experiences about Be Here Now, the first book, which is, it's the 40th anniversary of Be Here Now. And there's a site that's ramdassnow.com.
All right.
Has that on it. And also you can access books and some of what's going on through there.
Well, Rameshwar, it has been a pleasure having you on. And I know that our listeners are really going to enjoy the book. What I want to let them know is that obviously you can get this book at any of your major book stores. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's called The Path of the Heart, Be Love Now. And we have been on this morning with Rameshwar Dash, who co-authored this with Ram Dass. And Rameshwar, it's truly a pleasure having you on and an opportunity to speak with you about the third book in kind of the trilogy here. I don't know if there's another to come, but the reality is we look forward to it if it evolves.
Well, this one's been fun, Greg, and I really appreciate being on with you. And, you know, I don't know what we have to offer, except that it is kind of an offering, and I hope that it touches other people's hearts, too.
Well, I think that the fact that they can read the history and they can understand Ram Dass's journey and how you guys have done it. And I want to let my listeners know that there's quite a few pictures in this as well. So it kind of goes through this and the meeting of the saints. And it's really a wonderfully done. Both of you have done a very good job at not only getting to a little bit of the history and the stories, but also getting to the essence of what you're trying to communicate to people. Which is find the love within yourself, spread that love around. Don't separate yourself from others. And obviously, as you said very early on in this interview, learn to be an observer of self. I think that's a real important starting point, isn't it? That's your awareness point.
Well, if all that comes through, we did good.
Yeah, and, we did. We
you
did
know,
really
Das
good.
Means servant, so we're just the carriers of the water, and we're... just the servant class bringing things along.
Yeah, well, we're doing our work in that part. So I want to thank you for your time with me today, and I really hope that we can do this again. It's a pleasure.
Great to talk.